Tarry here, where the stories never grow old, and you hear something new every time they are told and it comes clear. So tarry here, where it doesn't matter your age, and when we gather round the table, we all take the stage year after year. So tarry here.
Welcome to the Enlightened Radio Storytelling Hour at enlightenedradio.org. Today is Monday, August 21st. Our theme today is health care, and we have a variety of offerings for you today, listeners. How are you, Stosh? This is Fanny Crawford.
And this is Stosh Ziolkowski. I'm feeling pretty good because I'm home. And of course, you know, because of Terry, I'm well taken care of. And can't do anything about my face.
It's lovely. It's very interesting.
Yeah.
You're going to tell us about that?
I think I will probably mention it. And it's not as big as it was. My face was actually sticking out about 2 inches.
Okay. Well, your face overall is still about the same size.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, when I fell flat on my face and hit my left side there. And luckily,
why don't you give us like a 2-minute recap of the fall, and then we'll talk about speak.
Okay. Well, I was sitting on the side of the bed and I passed out. And when I did, of course, passing out means I don't know what happened. However, we reconstructed it because Terry heard me hit the floor. She was upstairs in her yoga room. She came dashing down and found me crawling on the floor, mumbling and wondering what I was looking for, because I didn't feel a thing. And when she helped me get into bed and everything, she said, "You have a terrible bruise on your face." And I said, "Oh, really?" And she said that twice. And I was like, "Oh, in my mind, I'm thinking she's saying that because she just wants me to feel better about falling. And she had to help me in. And so she, you know, it's not as bad as she's saying because she's just trying to have fun with me." So a few minutes after that, while we were waiting for the ambulance, because she called the ambulance right away. While we were waiting for the ambulance, just out of curiosity, because I was not in any pain, no pain at all, okay? Felt kind of weird, but wasn't in pain. I reached up to check my cheek, and my cheek was like, seriously, it was like 2 or 3 inches out from where it is normally, you know, and I'm not surprised at that, but I was surprised then so much that I took my finger away as if I had touched the hot stove. I was like, "Oh my God, she wasn't kidding." So,
well, it looks pretty good today.
It actually, and it went down by, you know, that was Tuesday morning. By Wednesday, it was much better. But it hasn't changed a whole lot since Wednesday. The major stuff went down. Puffy. I have one sore spot right here. Is a little, that must be the basic place where I hit.
Right.
And it's, you know, there's that bony part around there. And I think that's, but it's only sore if I touch it. And
okay. Well, you can give us more of the highlights of your week, of your recovery.
Yes.
But why don't you just speak right now?
Okay.
And well,
you know,
then I can
I'm
talk
sorry,
about
but I will. I don't. I didn't. I'm in a different. I'm in a different room than normally. We've had to make some changes and stuff. But I will talk about speak.
Okay. Okay.
And I'll do it now if you want.
Sure.
Okay. So speak coming up for in our 11th season for speak. Teller in September is Diane Macklin, who many of you know, and who is a friend of ours and a great friend to speak and the storytelling. And Diane was the winner of the commission project that Speak offered this year, or last year, to do an interesting new story. And so Diane will be premiering that story on September the 12th and 13th.
I am really looking forward to that.
I am too. And I'm hoping that one of my restrictions will be removed before then, so that I can see her in person. But if not, luckily we'll have a Zoom thing and I'll be able to sit at home and watch it.
Yeah.
Right now, I'm restricted in a lot of ways. I'm wearing a heart monitor until August 31st. So it's taped to my chest, much different than the ones from 30 years ago that were like a small boom box
Can you give us the website for more information about Diane?
Yes, speakstoryseries.com. And you can get all the details, and it, I'm sure in the introduction to her program, I'm guessing that Adam will highlight the process of the commission.
Right.
And if he doesn't do it on Tuesday, he'll probably do it on Wednesday.
Anyway, I'm
excited about it because that is a special thing, I don't have this written in stone or even in ink or anything, but I believe Speak is going to commission a story every year. I think that's Adam's plan.
That would be wonderful.
And I believe because we got 40 some a variety of stories submitted by people. And it was hard to eliminate people. You know, I was on the committee to read them and give them a score based on their ideas and presentation. But I had it down to three outstanding stories, not even thinking about their names. I mean, I didn't go by who they were at all. In fact, it was kind of a blind thing at first, and Diane was one of them because I was mesmerized by her proposal, and also knowing how she performed. I mean, I've seen her perform a number of times, so I was thrilled by that. However, there were a couple others that were just, you know, I was glad that. Adam had to make the final choice.
Sure.
Because I would not have wanted been the one guilty to pick somebody over somebody else, you know. And even in the top five, they were just a couple of them were people that I know you've seen in special places.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, I know Diane's been working hard on the story because she hasn't come to several events that I expected to see her.
Right, I'm sure. You know, I mean, the challenge of that was just wonderful. And she's got, and there was a monetary award.
Mm-hmm.
Plus, she's performing in Speak in September. And so she'll be paid whatever anybody else would be paid.
Right.
You know, besides her award.
Yeah.
So, you know. A worthwhile endeavor, worth working for, and I'm excited about it. And the truth is, I think I was real excited about hearing your mother,
right?
But I'm not going to be there.
I know, but you're going to get a little preview today. Because
right, okay.
I'm going to do a
Good.
Little piece of my mother's story. So is it okay with you if I go first?
Yes, it is. Yeah, I don't know if you know this, but I'm homebound for at least 2 weeks.
Yeah.
I can't even ride in the car unless it's to the doctor's.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And that's, you know, I don't go that many places, but it already feels like, wow, I can't go out.
And you have visitors?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. Well, then I'll be talking to you about that.
Okay. And I have home health care. A lady came yesterday and explained the whole business to us. And the whole deal. And my insurance is paying for it 100%, which is wonderful. And starting tomorrow, I'll be doing some physical therapy. And I'm not sure what that means, because they have to go by what the problems I have are, which right. are not, which are new. Some.
I'm going to, I think we haven't thanked Andy yet. So
no,
I'm gonna thank Andy Offutt Irwin for opening our show with Terry here. Andy's a good guy, and we really appreciate his support. So I'm going to go ahead and tell this story about my mom.
Okay.
I'm going to portray my mother in this story. And if you will set a timer, Stash, then you can tell me.
I have it.
I go.
I have recorded the time right now.
Okay. So this is my mother speaking, Miriam Crawford.
Good.
All right, I'm here. Yes, I'm fine. Good evening, good afternoon, everyone. My daughter Fanny asked me to talk about healthcare on the radio today, and I don't really know what she has in mind. What I know about healthcare is mostly not good news, and I know the radio show was supposed to be positive. Well, whether we're talking about public health or the cost of healthcare in this country, or maybe she meant my own health, what was she thinking? None of these are happy topics. My healthcare, there's nothing to talk about. I'm old. I'm 90 something now, and I won't be around too much longer. Well, I'm not ready to go, but we don't have a choice. When it's time, that's it. I've been going through my file cabinets, trying not to leave so much clutter for my children to cope with when I'm gone. It's a 4-drawer file cabinet, and one whole drawer is filled with folders labeled medical something. So I'm just going to read the titles of these file folders to you, and then that'll give me time to think a little bit more about what I want to say about healthcare. So arthritis exercises is the first file. Bill's medical care, that's my husband. Bill's Parkinson's disease, Bill's prostate cancer, Blue Cross Blue Shield, chest x-rays, hemorrhoids, home health care, hospice care, managing pain, medical expenses paid, medical expenses unpaid, Medicare and You guide, medication over the counter, medication prescriptions, physician's records. There's several of those files. Pelvic exercises, physical therapy, and it goes on and on and on. Well, I guess I'll talk a minute about, no, hospitals, doctors, that's not even worth a conversation. I know I could talk about WILF, the Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, and their women's budget, a feminist political economy. That's the other name. Healthcare is a critical component of economic policy, which should be based, I think you will agree with me, on how values and principles closely match how we want our society to function, how we want to be governed, and how our resources should be distributed. Now, I have a living will. Bill and I both signed our healthcare directives years ago, a long time ago. But it came up again recently. I was in the hospital. I guess I'm going to have to talk about a little bit about the hospital. What a waste of time that is, waiting to get healthy again. Now, you could say it was my own fault, but it just is. It's what happens in ordinary life. I was rushing. That's true. I should have allowed more time to prepare. But you know, there's never enough time to prepare. You just have to get on with it. There was a meeting. a WILF meeting, Women's International League for Peace and Freedom. It was called for 1 p.m. on the other side of the city. It was a weekday, and I was bringing the DVD. We were going to watch this little movie on the women's budget, on the feminist policies for the economy. And we were to watch this DVD. Now, WILF, International League for Peace and Freedom, is the sister organization of the League of Women Voters. And I'm sure our listeners today, most of you will have heard of the League of Women Voters, founded at just about the same time as WILF, a little before. And the Women's International League for Peace and Freedom was begun in 1919, just after the big meeting of the International Women's Congress against World War I. And that World War I meeting was at The Hague in Amsterdam just a few years before. Jane Addams, who also previously founded the American Women's Peace Party, was the first WILF president. So she's part of our history. Now that's ancient history, but this day, just 2 years ago, I think, 2008, I think that was when it was. I was at home in Philadelphia and I was running late and rushing, trying to get to the other side of town, got in my car. I had my books with me, my briefcase, this DVD. I had to pull over by the side of the road. It was in my old neighborhood, West Philly. I'd come from Mount Airy, where I live now. So there I was on 48th Street, just off Lancaster Avenue, West Philly. My heart was racing. I thought, this is ridiculous. I'll just park here and I'll wait for my heart to stop pounding. But it didn't stop. 10 minutes, 20 minutes, 40 minutes, I sat there. I took off my sweater. I rolled all the windows down. It wasn't a hot day. It was on the cool side, but I felt so overheated. There was a woman on the porch of the house across the street from where I parked, and she kept coming to her door and looking out at me. After 10 minutes, she came down the steps and crossed the street to talk to me. Are you all right? Well, she didn't sound like that. I'm from Brooklyn. This woman had a Philadelphia accent, African-American. I told her I was fine. I was just resting. She asked if I wanted her to call an ambulance for me. No, no, no. The last thing I want is to end up in the hospital. I'll be on my way in a few minutes. She came back to check on me every 10 minutes. I was checking my watch, calculating how long before I could get to the WILF meeting, checking the time. She crossed the street to me 3 times. Finally, I'd been there almost an hour, and she just called an ambulance against my wishes. They came, siren and all, through the neighborhood. I kept saying, no, no, no. But they checked my blood pressure and my pulse, and they talked me into going to the hospital. I was not happy, but I went. I was in there 4 days. They couldn't find anything wrong with me. They decided I'd been having a TIA, a transient ischemic attack, a mini stroke. They tried to hook me up to an oxygen tank as soon as I arrived, but I wasn't going to allow that. I had a living will, a health directive that said no extreme measures. Bill and I both signed our healthcare directives a long time ago, and I just said no, no, no. And they would not listen to me. They kept saying it was not an extreme measure. Oxygen was just routine. Well, it was not routine for me. I put up quite a fight. I had bruises all over me, and they finally tied me down. Well, my son, Doug, they finally reached him in California, and they let me talk to him on the phone, and he said I should let them give me the oxygen. I was not happy. You may have guessed by now, I value my independence. What a Jezebel he turned out to be. He was probably right, but it was demoralizing that I couldn't be in charge of my own health. When Doug and Fanny finally came to see me in the hospital, I told them the story about the woman on the porch and how she kept asking me about an ambulance and me saying no, no, no. And that she took it upon herself to call the emergency crew for me without my permission. The next thing I know, those two, Fanny and Doug, had gone shopping and made up this big gift basket full of groceries and fancy foods, extravagant purchases, candied fruit, fresh peaches from California, Belgian chocolates, imported sauces, all with fancy wrapping paper, big bows. Well, I didn't actually see this basket, but I'm imagining. I've seen their baskets before. These two are big spenders. They took the basket to this nosy woman from the porch, the Good Samaritan, they called her. So maybe she did really save my life. Whether it was worth all that is another question. Maybe it was just time for me to go. Well, that was 2008, I think, and I'm still here. That was 2 years ago. So who am I to say? I was in that hospital 4 days, and then in the nursing center at my retirement community for more than 2 months. The time for rest, for sleeping, was certainly welcome, but it was terribly hard to be treated as an invalid. I remember walking in the garden just outside my room on the ground floor, using a walker. Oof. Hideous thing, clanking and ticking, almost a chattering, tick, 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 everywhere, every step, every movement. So mostly I would sit in the sun through the early spring or in the shade once the weather heated up and try to figure out the flowers, the names of the flowers, which I didn't know very many. They were very pretty. No matter how bedraggled or sadly limp and hanging their heads from too little water or critter damage. That's what my gardening friends call the nibble leaves and bent stems, critter damage. I enjoyed the flowers very much. But there was an impressive tiny little vegetable garden there too. I greatly admire my fellow inmates. I started using that term when I was in the nursing center. My friends, I admired them for spending hours out there in the sun. Of course, the vegetables need the sun. So if you want to nurture plants, you have to suffer a bit in the heat if it's that kind of day. I started dabbling with flowers in the last few years that Bill and me had the apartment building on Parkside Avenue in West Philly. We had a small front garden space below the front porch. I never got around to practical vegetables, just a lilac bush and some tulips, iris from one of Bill's nieces, Bill's closest sister. Her name was Iris. But I never had time to fool with any gardening once we got to the Quaker home. Vegetables, not in the garden, but Bill and I both saw fresh vegetables as important to the health of our children and ourselves. One of the reasons we chose the Quaker home, not the primary reason, but a factor that we certainly checked on our list of criteria, was the food. And the reports we had were good. Plenty of food, for one thing, but not extravagant. And a permanent salad bar, fresh and prepared vegetables. Though there are desserts, lots of ice cream and other sweets available almost every meal. We never ate breakfast in the dining room, but all the rest. But all that's changed after we'd been there a few years. Even the Society of Friends, the Quakers, were not immune to economic pressures, pushing locally administered retirement and assisted living homes to sell out to corporate for-profit organizations. It was a terrible blow to learn that our healthcare, including our every midday and evening meal, would be even more under the control of big business, a CEO and middle managers who cared much more for their bottom line than for us residents. We and they put a good face on it, but the changes started immediately in the dining room, certainly, many more prepackaged and commercially prepared entrees and side dishes, but even more dramatically in the nursing care center. And it wasn't just me and Bill that suffered. We had family to advocate for us. Doug is a physician, my son, and a gerontologist, after all, and Fanny lives just 3 hours away and visits regularly. The national and state ranking of our nursing center in our Quaker home just plummeted then on almost all the measured indicators related to healthcare. My friends, some of them were moved out of state by their families, not necessarily because the facilities were better in those places, but because they would be closer to their children, sons and daughters, nieces, nephews, who could check on them and help meet some of their needs. Staffing for us was the biggest budget cut. And then the volunteers. We had fewer health aides and nursing staff on the floor. Most of the volunteers had been dedicated members of the local Friends meeting houses. Lifelong Quakers, Philadelphia Quakers, who began to drift away from our retirement home and the nursing center as the values and day-to-day working conditions for the lower level employees and the helpers deteriorated. I didn't realize how bad it was till Bill was a patient in the nursing center and his dementia and decline required that I agree to his moving out of our independent living apartment and into the 24-hour care nursing center. That's when it became clear how much the place was changing. Well, he was in the shower there with an inexperienced attendant when he fell and broke his hip. And of course, he never recovered from that. Nursing care homes are not inevitable at the end of life. My sister Irene was 18 months younger than me, had emphysema. We grew up in Brooklyn, but I came to Philly with Bill when we married. Irene moved to Florida when she and her husband Jerry split up. And their daughter, my niece Ginger, bought a house there in Miami. So Irene, even when she was dying with emphysema, she had Ginger and her family to care for. Fanny and her husband wanted me to move to Maryland, but my whole life is in Philadelphia. Nothing against Maryland. I visit often and I come to political and library association meetings in Baltimore, but Philadelphia is my home. So the nursing center, a fact of life in our society right now. So read about WILF, the Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, and the Feminist Political Economy Analysis. We call it the Women's Budget. But you can use that longer title to look it up on your phone or your computer. As citizens, we rarely are allowed input into the creation of policies and infrastructure that support globally sustainable, equitable systems for justice and equitable distribution of resources. And don't we all want our economy and society to be based on care for each other and democratic principles rather than the profit motive? So that's my take on healthcare. Get involved, plan ahead, organize your neighbors.
Wow.
I'm done.
Very nice. Very nice. That was 12 from 28 is 14 minutes. 14 minutes and a couple seconds.
Thank you, Mom.
Yeah.
You're welcome.
Okay. So you are listening. To... Go ahead.
No, you started. Go ahead.
You are listening to the Enlightened Radio Storytelling Hour. I'm Stasi Olkowski.
And I'm Fanny Crawford.
And our first guest today was
Miriam Crawford.
I like your mother's name. It's a nice name. I do. I like. I. You're. I. You know. Like. You know. I love numbers and everything. Miriam Crawford. Unless it has some strange spelling, is a 6 and an 8.
Letters. Is that a good thing?
I think so. It's not a bad thing if it's not even numbers or anything like that, but it's easier. Names are easier to learn and pronounce and remember if you fix one of them something other than just the sound.
What about her middle name, Isabel?
Isabel, 6 letters.
All right.
It's perfect. See, I like that my name, even though my name is a real mouthful. My first name is 10 letters. My middle name is 4 letters. My last name is 10 letters. And so when I was a teacher, I focused on that sometimes.
To what
it would help purpose? Me to remember names and stuff.
Oh, that is a good idea. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, and her maiden name is Wexner, Wexner. So there's another 6.
It's another 6. And it's even, and it's 6, 6, 6, and it's 8. And it doesn't make it better or worse if it's not. It's just that it gives it a personality besides just the name.
What kind of personality? A 6, 6, 8
your
personality?
You go by Fanny Crawford, right?
Right.
Okay, it's a 5 and an 8.
Yeah.
So I could give you all kinds of things. If when I first met you, I could remember you because you weren't Heinz 57, but you were Crawford 58. See, I used a lot of techniques for remembering things because as a teacher, I had, depending on the school and the subject, I had an enormous number of students over the years. I probably had about 6,000 students in my career. Mm-hmm. Some schools, I have like 4 chemistry classes at the end of my career in science, 4 chemistry classes, 35 kids in each class. All right. So that's only 140 on them at the most. But in some schools I taught where I lectured to 200 students twice a week. 200.
Did you have plus, to know all their names?
Of course. Any teacher who doesn't know all the names of their people in a classroom should not be a teacher. I don't care if he's the teacher of the universe or she.
By sight, you could match the name to the face for 200 kids.
Here's my deal. First time I give you an exam in chemistry, I did this every year, no matter where I taught, public or private. First time I put a test on your desk, if I can't identify you first and last name, all you have to do is write 100 on that paper and give it back to me.
How did they know you knew them? Because you put the right test on the right desk?
No, because I would say, good morning, Fanny Crawford. Here's your test. Good morning, Adam. Here's your, and that gave me a lot of, what do you call it?
Cachet.
Oh, I was thinking that word. I didn't know. I thought it was. I almost said cashew. it gave me a lot of cachet with the kids.
Mm-hmm.
Because I would say to them, when I ask you to memorize a few elements, don't gripe about it too much. Just do it. It's just a little bit of work. And people will say to me constantly, memorization is not education. And I would say, oh, yeah? Where do you live? What's your address? Oh, how do you know that? Did you get that out of the air? Is that related to the color of the ground your house is built on? Come on, what's your phone number?
So how many of your fellow teachers knew 200 students' names?
Probably none of them.
Oh, okay.
The one thing I never did, and it, both to my credit and not, is I never tried to copy any teachers, except I accepted their influence. Teachers I had as a kid, mm-hmm. My first chemistry teacher set a standard that was unbelievable. And some of it is nonsense, but I met Brother Gerald when he said, excuse me, The man in the back of the room, first they bring me those two metal rods behind you, will you please? I walked from the back of the class to the front, handed them to him. He grabbed one out of my hand, pulled it back and yelled, "En garde," and fought me back to my desk. And the kids were hysterical and everything. And I thought afterwards, at first it was a little embarrassing, but afterwards, I realized he was just making an impression. He wanted the people to know that this was a place that would be more than just chemistry and numbers and letters. And he did a lot of things like that.
And, a good role model.
And especially for me, because I adapted all kind of crazy stuff to get their attention, you know?
Okay, so story time. I mean, that was a good story.
Oh,
especially boy. How you put the numbers in there. I like that.
Yeah.
But we're going to talk about healthcare, right?
Okay. So, right. Healthcare. You know, I went to the hospital last week, and I don't want to tell a story that is the old people, and I'm an old person now, organ recital. You know, you call up your sister or your cousin and the both of you people in their 70s or so, and they recite everything that's happened lately, you know, and you tell about your blood tests or about skinning your knee or about, you know, the doctor not fixing something that you know he could have fixed, but he's just too lazy. So, you know what I mean? And it becomes a gripe session instead of sharing. And so I don't want to do that. I did have a bad fall last week. Had to go in an ambulance. Went to a wonderful facility in Martinsburg, West Virginia, a mile from our house, which brings up a whole neat thing about that I will discuss that came up because of this. For 7 years living in this general area, 2017 we moved to Sharpsburg. 2 years ago, 2021, we moved into Martinsburg, and both of those times it was, we rent houses. We stopped buying houses after we sold our third one, because we decided we didn't want to be homeowners and be responsible, fix all the stuff. If you're a tenant and you can do it, then the landlord fixes things. I did have a point there. I'll remember it. But going to a hospital from Sharpsburg to the Hagerstown Medical Center, Meredith and Robin Wood. That was a bit of a haul, 20 miles or so. Now in Martinsburg, going there is another 22 miles, and we have to go on the highway. Have to go on 81, and that's and then 70, and that can be brutal at times, especially for someone driving you to the hospital. If it's not in an ambulance, it's kind of scary on a highway. If it's an ambulance, it's not too bad because, you know, I drove an ambulance for 2 years off, you know, not every day, but, you know, on a rotation in Arkansas. And I tell you, I have a lot of respect for ambulance drivers. I would step out of the way. I would pull off the highway, anything, when an ambulance fires up their siren, because I realized from the first week I was doing that, just how important it is that you drive carefully, have to drive quickly, have to be careful of not only the person you're transporting, but your EMT that's in the back. And also the fact that people on the highway are doing their best. Now, it doesn't always seem like it, but when the ambulance siren goes off, people do try their best to get out of the way and to show respect. And sometimes drivers don't react fast enough, and, you know, they may feel, I don't know, something, But I find most people think of ambulance people being very well. I know I was for 2 years when people recognized me, and even afterwards, I was still living in Arkansas, and I had to stop because of an injury. It was amazing the kind of respect that people would give you in the neighborhood. Oh, I reckon you were the ambulance driver last week. I picked up Mr. So and so. I said, yes, thank you. And it was, you know, it was like just doing what I was supposed to do, but people appreciate it. And you know, I try to as much as possible try to think positively about people, even those who cut you off and stuff. You know, they may be going to their mother-in-law's to save the cat or something. You know, so okay. Healthcare. I have been in hospitals that I can remember ever since I was 7 years old. In fact, I'm the first child, the only child in my family, my immediate family, the youngest of four, a sister 12 years older than me, a brother 9 years older than me, both of them deceased. But my other brother, 3 years and 2 months older than me, and we are very close. He's still alive. But, you know, I was the first one born in a hospital, and that's because my mother fell the day I was born. And it was a very bad day for my parents. 1941, August of 1941, the hospital I was taken to, which is a great hospital, but was much smaller, 82 years ago, it was a different world in 1941. They didn't have as many fancy machines and gadgets and things. And they told my parents that I would be a stillborn baby because they couldn't detect a heartbeat. My father he had a part-time job driving a hearse for his cousin. He actually went to his Eddie was John's son. And he got a small baby casket because he thought I was going to be stillborn and he would just be taking my body to the undertaker. And turned out that I wasn't stillborn. Turned out that at 11:30 that night I was born and I was perfectly happy. I shouldn't say perfectly because I was Stosh, but I was very happy. And my parents were happy and relieved, and it was nice. And since then, I can think a number of doctor's appointments that I went to because I grew up in Baltimore in the streets, had a lot of fun, skinned my knee a number of times, broke my glasses, broke an arm. When I was 7 years old, I had my tonsils out. I got to spend I think it was at least two nights, it might have been three nights in the hospital. They didn't bring you in, rip out your tonsils, and send you home in a cab the same day. And I had a lot of fun because the nurses were very considerate. I had heard stories about you might get ice cream after having your tonsils out. Sure enough, I did. And then I found out that they weren't so much being nice to you as cold ice cream was good on you after that surgery. You know, I don't know why. I mean, I believe it because I love the ice cream. But I got to sit out after the first night, after the surgery, I got to sit out near the nurse's station because I had trouble taking even an aspirin. I still have a problem with swallowing pills. I've probably taken a million pills in my life and I have the problem swallowing them all the time. And but it was fun because the nurses had, I think they thought I was being funny at first, but they realized I really had a struggle to swallow those pills. It was something about, I don't know. But anyway, I got to sit out by the nurse's station in a chair with a blanket covering me, even though it was, you know, probably in the springtime. But I got treated real special. I think there were no other kids in that wing for those couple of days. So I was their only relief for something. As I grew up, I had all kinds of adventures with healthcare. once playing baseball, I dove for a ball in center field, broke my little finger. Didn't realize it was broken or anything, but it did look like on my right hand because I tried to catch the ball with my bare hand because it was wider. Anyway, my friend Johnny, who was a bit older than me and he had his license, he drove me from the ball field. At the end of the game, he drove me and we stopped at my house so I could tell my mother he was going to take me to the emergency room. To this day, I do not understand this. How could a 16-year-old in Baltimore, 19, you know, I was almost 16, so it was 1957. All right. How could a 16-year-old boy, Johnny, who was 16, drive me to the hospital? They treated me. He took me home. And, you know, they treated me. They gave me a couple needles. One in a place I didn't want to get it. But the older nurse said to the younger nurse, oh, no, not in his arm. Here, give me the needle, said to me. Drop your pants. I had to get some kind of a tetanus or something. I don't know, but in my backside. And that was embarrassing because that nurse was young and pretty. The one giving me the needle was not. She was old and I thought she was being mean, but she was just doing her job. And besides, it gave Johnny a great story because he was allowed to stay with me. And he gave a great story to tell the guys on the corner, you know. I heard a number of versions of that, you know, with added stuff. But I just amazing. Can you imagine that, 1957? And I don't remember anything about a bill. I'm sure that, you know, they must have billed my parents or something. But I never heard about it. And my dad never talked to me about it. I mean, he talked to me about my fingernail. And my finger is still crooked. And it turned out that actually the bone tip of my little finger, the bone had pushed up underneath my nail. And it got uglier every minute. And Johnny insisted on stopping at my house to tell my mother because he was going to take me to the hospital. And he didn't want my mother. I always had curfews. He didn't want my mother to worry. And you know. And so we went in the house and I told my mother and she said, let me see your hand. And I said, no, it's okay. Johnny's going to take me to the emergency room. She said, let me see it. I just want to see. And she reached out, took my finger and pulled it straight up. And I almost fainted because it really hurt. And she said, yeah, you need to go to the doctor's. So anyway, what an adventure. Healthcare, something had to be different in that time and place. I would like to mention another time when it was really kind of strange. And it was because of, well, the two things. When I was 36 years old, I was stung by two yellow jackets reaching for some wood out of a wood pile in the home where I live with my wife and kids. I began to not be able to breathe. My wife took me and the kids, and she called the doctor. He said, get here to our office. Don't go to the hospital. You need to get here. The hospital is more miles. I passed out on his doorstep as I was opening the door, fell across the doorstep area. I got my first injection of whatever the bee stuff is that they give you when you're allergic to stings. While I was lying on the floor with my feet on the outside steps, and I got a second injection about an hour and a half after that because the first one hadn't done as much as it does sometimes. I felt bad for the doctor that time, so bad, because I was a teacher, a teacher from a different school system, but from someone who I actually had met at a couple of meetings. had died in that doctor's office that morning, about 2 hours before I got there. And I really felt bad for the doctor, Dr. Griffin. And, you know, God, how do you come back to work the next day knowing that you lost one patient? And almost, I was there for 4 hours. He did wind up sending me to the hospital just so that, you know, they could look at me and say, okay, you can go home, it's over. But for years, I've had occasions to be stung by a bee and, you know, going to the hospital, you know. The day my daughter graduated from eighth grade, she and I were cleaning up the yard a little bit early in the morning because we were going to have a party for her. And our home was out in the country a little bit. I got stung by a couple of wasps, sent to the hospital in an ambulance. I was wearing running shorts, no socks, beat up red sneaker running shoes, a kind of a tank top that was pretty dirty because we were doing stuff anyway. Ambulance takes me to the hospital. I go in and they keep me there. This is on a Sunday. My daughter's in the Catholic school, going to graduate at 3 that afternoon. So I had to stay in the emergency room and they took care of me. Finally said, in another little while, we're going to release you. And I said, can I use the phone? Yes, I called home. He said, please have Terry Jones, good friend of mine, said, please have Terry Jones bring my clothes so I can go to my daughter's graduation. Because it was in the same town and it was only not even a mile from the hospital to the little Catholic school. So, you know, and so Terry showed up in a few minutes, not too many, 20 minutes later, Terry shows up with my suit. He forgot to get a belt and no shoes. So I wear, and a shirt that was not a dress shirt and no tie. My daughter was graduating first in her class and received a number of awards for outstanding, like, subjects, you know, science and English, and I think maybe even in math. Anyway, the parents of a child being awarded something were, this was a Catholic school and it was done in church, were asked to come up forward with the child so that they could get, I don't know, I guess a feeling of they did a good job too. And I remember thinking, oh my goodness, I look like Ronald McDonald tried to dress up with these ugly red running shoes. They were not great looking. Like nowadays, you could wear Air Jordans to the hospital and everybody would be jealous. You know, they'd want, oh, where'd you get shoes? But then I know there were people who giggled and who chuckled. And I do remember near the end of the ceremony, I think it was Sister Mary, made a remark and said, I know Mara's dad looks like he didn't care about the ceremony because of his dressing, but he came here directly from the hospital. And apparently there was a mix-up about what kind of things he needed. And he didn't even get a belt, but he did a good job because he supported his daughter. And that was one of those great things, you know? Here's somebody with compassion. And there have been many other times I've been taken to the hospital. And every time I am very thankful that it's a good habit of mine. It has nothing to do with me, really. It's just built in. The minute I get into the care of someone, like in an ambulance, I relax. I don't panic about, no matter what's going on. And I'm relaxed. The doctor who took care of me in 84 when I had a heart attack in the emergency room talked to me afterwards and said, you know, your body let you hold on and just keep fighting until you were in a place where you felt you were okay and people were going to take care of you. And by relaxing, that let the heart do what it was going to do when you had an attack. And that doctor was just wonderful because he wasn't cold or clinical or anything. In fact, they had to use the things on my chest, on the way to, you know, bump, you know, and when I, because I was on the emergency room gurney, and that's when I had the attack. And then when I was brought around, the doctor was standing next to the gurney. He had his hand, one arm around my shoulders, another hand on my other shoulder, and said, "It's okay, we got you, you're back." And I never forget that, because I looked at him back from where. He said, "You just had an attack, but you're okay now. And we're going to get everything straightened out, send you to the cardiac unit." And that was incredible, you know, if it had anything to do with the idea that I could relax once somebody was taking care of me, and it happened right in the emergency room. I spent a lot of time in that emergency room over the years because I lived in that particular town for many years. But I'm always thankful for the medical people. Last week, I was treated by so many wonderful nurses, and they were so kind. You know me well, and you know I have someone recently said he can talk all day, and that's true. And I love telling stories, and it's just wonderful. But a number of nurses just stood politely and smiling, and held one of them held my hand while I told her a story that was far too long, and she even thanked me for it for sharing with her, and I just. You know, people who work in healthcare, nurses, doctors, if you run into any of them and they're grumpy, give them a break. They have a job that nobody should have. No one should have to come into a room with somebody that's on a gurney and may not even be conscious and have to make sure that you become okay. That is more stress than anything else, you know, and I really appreciate the healthcare in our country. May not be perfect, but I get treated really well anytime I'm involved in it. Thank you.
Thank you, Stosh. That was wonderful. Well, I think we are at the end of our time on our
58 minutes. Yeah. How about that? Yeah.
So this is Fanny Crawford.
And Stosh Steelkowski.
Your co-hosts for the Enlightened Radio Storytelling Hour at enlightenedradio.org. We are independent community radio broadcasting from Bolivar, West Virginia, Martinsburg, West Virginia, and Hagerstown, Maryland. The Storytelling Hour offers our listeners a window into the world of telling by traditional and non-traditional tellers, encouraging you, our listening community, to share, preserve, and expand all of our stories. Thanks for listening, and stay tuned for John Case. And
well, I must advise you that actually the automation has undergone some transformation since restarting, and today is now a country music day of various descriptions, okay, ranging anywhere from kind of like alternative country to not distinguishable really from folk music, really, you know, or the other end, which is, you know, rockabilly and,
right,
you know, get sweaty in the local bar kind of thing, you know, so, yeah. Anyway, so that's what's going to be happening, for the rest of the day. You guys, your programs are still slotted at 7 o'clock.
Okay.
Every day of the week. Oh, every night of the week, excuse me.
Cool.
And it's I randomized the most recent five.
Mm-hmm.
Cool.
As to which one plays. Okay.
Wow. There you go.
Yeah. So that's on the 7 at night, but every night. Anyway,
I hope you like the stories today, John.
Well, it reminded me of, you know, some serious novels about cancer wards that I've read. We've spent a lot of time in this family in hospitals.
Yeah.
Not on my behalf, really, on you know, our relations that have mostly passed. And
I realized lately that I have not met a nurse who was unpleasant in years. And lately, the young nurses are, I even asked one of them recently, do you guys get